You're listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This is season 13, episode 10. What's up, everybody? Stephen Roach here, and today on the show, we are featuring Andy Marie Tillman. Andy Marie Tillman is a comedian, a musician, a self-proclaimed recovering Pentecostal, and just a super fun person to be around. And you know, we creatives and contemplative types can tend to take ourselves a little too seriously sometimes, right? Well, I'm bringing Andy on the show today to shake that up a bit. In today's episode, Andy talks with me about the healing power of laughter, empathetic speech, and the importance of cultivating a community where we can develop a radical honesty. I hope you enjoyed listening to this one as much as I enjoyed having Andy on the show. I'm Stephen Roach, and this is the Makers and Mystics podcast, the podcast for the art-driven seekers of truth and lovers of life. Andy, thank you so much for joining me today on the Makers and Mystics podcast, my friend.
I'm glad to be here. New friend. Yeah. It'll be fun. It'll be funny. It might be traumatizing for somebody out there.
And that's exactly why I wanted you on the show.
To traumatize you. Now it's become a horror podcast. You weren't ready for that, but...
We could make it happen, I'm sure.
We can.
Well, you know, the beautiful thing about this is... Admittedly, I just came across your work, and I may have binged all of your comedic things, and then I started stalking your music, and so, like, I just had, like, a couple of days of getting to know Andy Marie Tillman, the artist, the musician, and I first heard of your work because I had Daniel Smith from the Danielson family, and then also Chris White, who's becoming a friend of mine as well. They were just on the show, and then I saw your work in their music video, Come and Save Me. And I said, I really need to have a conversation with Andy for several reasons. One, your art is incredible, and I'm really curious to kind of mind out some of the motivations behind your work. But also, I'm kind of thinking that somewhere back in the family tree, our Appalachian roots might have had some cross entanglements back there or something. And I just needed you on the podcast to see, is this her actual accent or is that a character?
Well, I mean, I think you do ham it up a little bit. Because you find out that part of Appalachian Southern humor is the cadence of it, the rhythm of it, you know, so you might play it up a little bit. I'd like to think that I've consistently maintained my accent, and I did that pretty purposefully, honestly, because I think it was like a little, like in college, if I go back and listen to voice memos or stuff I made, I was maybe trying to affect a little bit more neutral, just to be taken seriously, or I thought it would make me be taken more seriously. I was trying to be an intellectual in academia, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't mean to go into a whole diatribe about that, but sometimes I will even say to myself when I go back and look at something, oh no, was I putting on a little bit there? And then I've kind of come to terms with the fact that you are going to put on a little bit. Mm-hmm. Anybody from any region, if they're doing something specific to that region, you just kind of lean into it because that's part of humor is the way you say something. It's not just what you say.
Yes. You know, and I find it true in my life as well. If I go back to some of the small town environments where I grew up, my voice kind of changes it. The inflections, and it's almost like you embody the place, you know? I don't know. It's not a pretentious thing. It's just an interesting mode of communicating, I think.
Yeah, and I think us creatives do that more. It's that whole thing of empathetic speech. Mm-hmm. I think it's just openness. It's openness and... it's openness to receiving, but also it's like a certain mirroring that you do to communicate care or to communicate some kind of flow between you and another person. So yeah. I know that My husband has empathetic speech, but he does it. I'm like, you can't do that at the Mexican restaurant, sir. Do not start that. He was like, I didn't mean to. I'm so sorry. And it's not even good, too. It's not even like a good Hispanic accent. He's just like, he'd be like, anyway, I'm not going to do it, obviously.
Well, I'm curious to know what developed first in your life. Was it music? Was it acting? Did they kind of grow simultaneously in your creativity?
Music was first because I sang in church. My mom was a traveling gospel singer in her time. And so some of that carried over into later in her life, but she was always up in front of the church and doing big things in the cantata and all that jazz. So she was going to make me sing, but I like to sing too. If I go back and look at videos of me as a 3-year-old kid, I'm belting out songs, and I did always love music, but my mom really facilitated that. She got me up there with a mic, very much on purpose, and had me singing in front of the church. And then acting, I kind of wanted to do that pretty early too, because after I saw My Fair Lady, I was 6 years old, and I said that I wanted to do that. And my mom said, well, then you'd have to be an actor if you want to do that. And, I tried out for all the school plays, and then I started doing regional theater at a very young age when I was 13, and did that for many years too. But I think it's safe to say that music was first. It was from the womb, I was being sung to.
Well, it was very engaging for me because your music has a real folk personality, and it was a completely different side to who you are than what I see, say, on your TikTok or your Instagram or some of the social media outlets. I'm curious to know how all the different parts of who you are, maybe the multiverse that is inside of Andy Marie Tillman, how do these things coalesce inside of you? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. How do these things work together?
I'm trying to figure that out myself, honestly. I played a writer's round the other night, and the woman that headed it up said, I love hearing you like this. It's amazing to me that if I go onto your social media platforms, I am seeing what seems to be a totally different person. And I'm trying not to let that make me have an identity crisis. Not just her saying that, but realizing that there's some truth to it.
Yeah.
There's this dichotomy. Truly, I feel like music exists in a totally different space than acting and comedy does. But I know it's originating from the same source. I think with music, I'm too precious about it. Whereas with comedy, I'm not. And it's okay if an idea bombs. And it's okay, in essence, I'm just too precious with music. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. It's the one thing I want to be really special. And like I want it to, almost like a child that I want to be able to set over here that people don't get to, if you're not going to appreciate it, just don't even listen to it. Just go somewhere else.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I know in my own life, I write a lot of poetry. Mm-hmm. Most of my poetry is very mystical, esoteric, abstract, nonlinear. It comes from a really deep place. And it's interesting, some of the Makers and Mystics episodes, especially in the beginning, it was, you're listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. Yeah. You know what I mean? It is I've had to work on, it's not taking myself so seriously, but maybe in some regards it is. But then when you get with me in person, or if I've done a performance, because I'm a musician as well,
yeah,
if I've performed or if I'm doing public speaking, it's like we're talking jokes. We're having a party.
Right.
And people that know me from the podcast or people that have read my poetry, then when they get with me in person, it can feel like, who is this? It could feel like a totally different person. But
yeah,
I think that's one of the beautiful parts of the creative process, is to be able to take these dichotomies, these very different sides of ourselves, bring them together in a common context, and then see what might come out of that. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, as we're talking, I realize that a lot of what we do as creatives is, half the time we're trying to understand why we do it. And like, we're just constantly philosophizing about life and about what we've made and what it means. And I don't think we know. I mean, I think it's fun to talk about and pontificate, but I genuinely don't know. I don't know where ideas come from. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that I don't even feel bad bragging about, because I'm like, it didn't even feel like I did that. It really felt like it was downloaded onto me. So then I don't feel bad bragging about that, because I'm like, this don't have nothing to do with me.
That's good.
Really, I just got to be the medium for it. So I have to trust. I got to trust my heart. That's the thing, is I've got to trust my heart. Sometimes that's hard to do, but I think I'm getting to where I don't trust my mind too much. It does some weird stuff and gives me, it's a seat of all my unhappiness, honestly. But I think my heart is good. I think my heart is good, and I think it's trying to, I think I'm always like kind of trying to reach for grace, or, yeah, I trust the intent of my heart.
Well, you mentioned earlier about growing up in church, and then I noticed that on your Instagram,
my bio, it says recovering Pentecostal,
which I couldn't help but chuckle at that. I'm curious where your spiritual path has led you from then to present day, and if you still retain some of that from your youth, or where is that currently?
Oh, you know, in some ways I'm in a no man's land with that, because I'm finally daring to go it alone, which I think we all eventually have to get to that place to ever figure out what we really think or believe. When I was little, When I was little, I really loved Jesus, but I was very scared of God. I'm talking about the characters, the characters in the Bible. And I wanted to be close to Jesus, but God scared me. And ever since I can remember, I had a really deep fear of hell. Like when they would say forever, that was very visceral to me as a kid. And I know we can't grasp forever, but I knew that meant it didn't stop, you know? And so I would say a lot of my faith back then was based in fear. So it's hard to know how genuine any of that was. And it's hard for me to figure out how much of my beliefs now are nostalgic, or nostalgia, and how much of them are like genuine belief. Because not only was I raised Pentecostal, which is like a charismatic sect of Christianity, my family itself, like our family structure, full of very charismatic people, like just characters, you know? And they were very convincing. And all of those people, like my aunt, my mom, my uncles, my grandmother, they had a very genuine experience with their faith. Like the things that they said never read as manipulative to me. See, when I talk to other people that are, quote, traumatized by the church, it feels their stories feel so different than mine, because they seem mad because they think people were trying to manipulate them. Well, my thing is like, I'm just mad that I feel fear. But I'm not mad at those people, because to me, they really were trying to help me. They thought No, the only answer you've got here is you got to follow this word. We've got this word, you know, and that's the only way you're going to find purpose is if you do what this book says. But I went to a whole diatribe right there, but
that's good.
I think, well, I don't know what I think. I don't know what I think. I believe in God. I believe in God. I'm also like in recovery for now 4.5 years. So like I'm very, higher power driven.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that looks like. And sometimes I think I borrow from a lot of different religions and a lot of different concepts of God.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And I bring up a post that you had on your Instagram that really moved me, actually, you know, and it was, it was advice for those who had left the church, you know, and I may even put a link to that in the show notes because I'd love for people to see that. I thought it was beautifully said. I felt the genuineness of what you're saying. And I know that in this time period of our lives, that is an experience that many people are experiencing where they don't know where they belong in the faith space. And I would think, especially for creatives, you know, a lot of the people that keep up with Makers and Mystics and some of the other creative events that I host and that I'm leading, we're kind of in this liminal space, you know, where we have a deep-rooted sense of faith, but yet at the same time, the context in which that faith works itself out, we don't always easily find home. And I think in some ways, that's why a lot of folks have gathered together in the Makers and Mystics community. But I think one thing that I really appreciated about what you were saying is just talking about the importance of being honest with yourself,
yeah,
and being honest with those around you. And I think that that is at the heart of where a lot of the friction, of course, I can't overgeneralize someone's experience, you know, but like I know that that sense of not being able to be honest with the questions that we have, the things that we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I say it often at the beginning of our events, I say, you're in a safe place to have more questions than answers. And I think that that's an important part of our culture, you know, of the environment that we're stewarding here.
Mm-hmm.
But I really loved your honesty about that and just, you know, giving people that space to explore what they believe and what they don't. I've kind of been a quasi-spiritual person from my earliest years, but that took so many winding twists and turns in my own journey. But being able to be honest with the questions and to just have a safe place to be where you are, I think that in and of itself can be healing and lead to some of the answers that we want. What do you think?
Oh, you have to hope that. You have to hope that. I don't think you have a choice, really. Another thing in recovery, and I'm not talking about just like big book thumping recovery. I'm just talking about getting over any kind of addiction that you've got, right, is a pretty radical honesty.
Totally.
And I know that part of what kept me in a loop was feeling stuck, feeling like I had to keep up a facade. And really, just feeling like I had to keep the lie going, just to tread water, really. And I realized that, like that was a pattern I had even when I was a kid, because a lot of my questions were turned away, probably because people didn't know how to answer them. Like I would ask things when I was real little, like. I remember in Sunday school saying, well, sometimes I just feel bad for Satan because why did God make him like that? And, you know, what I'd get was, well, I wouldn't be feeling bad for him because he done a lot of bad stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, but that didn't answer my question. And I was very inquisitive like that. I'm not saying that I was brilliant. I just thought outside of the box a little.
Yes.
And when you do, when you're different like that and people don't know how to answer you, you really get to feeling isolated pretty early. You're like, uh-oh. If it's not just hide this part of myself, like how do I tweak it so that it's edible, so that it's manageable for me to exist and be loved, and for others to not think I'm weird or bad. Like, I don't want to be bad. So when you get old enough to kind of look back on it and say, there was a lot of lying, even though there was nothing malevolent about it, there was a lot of lying going on. I'm gonna have, the only way I can get myself out of this knot is to like tell one truth at a time almost, and just pull the thread back, you know?
Yes.
You get it. You get yourself up in a big knot to where you can't move, to where you feel like you're almost like you're, I mean, I got to one point when I was deep in my addiction and I was having panic attacks all the time. I truly felt like I wasn't even, like I didn't even exist. Like I was disconnected from my own body, and it was a scary feeling. So yeah, I think that there was something in my brain, some kind of mechanism to protect me probably, that kind of dissociated from everything.
Totally. No, I understand that completely, just in my own journey, you know, and I know that
it's awful. Know.
No, it is. It is. For me, isolation was really a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I found myself so bound up and not really being able to talk to people about the things that were going on inside of me. There did become a bit of dissociation in myself, and then also with the community around me. And, you know, I always had a value for honesty and integrity and things of that nature. But I was so bound up inside of myself, you know, it really took a lot of time for me getting away from social media, getting away from things, and getting some real counseling and things like that, mm-hmm. that helped me walk through it to come to a place of health. But I think, you know, community and being able to have a community that you can be honest with is such a vital part of our mental health. I think it's a vital part of our own creative journey, you know, and of course for our spiritual journey. And so I just wanted to champion that. And again, going back to the single post that I was referring to, just really love putting forth this idea of being honest with yourself and being honest in community.
Yeah.
Well, I want to switch gears and I'm going to ask you a question, because this is something that's, and it's probably so intuitive that you don't think about it. So it might be hard to put words to, but when we think about comedy and we think about laughter, you know, laughter is a human thing,
yeah,
you know?
It is.
And it's also, in my view, a very deep and mystical thing. And humor and laughter is a way at getting at truth, like subversive humor,
mm-hmm.
subversion, satire. And just by looking at the satire and the humor of the things that you're doing, I find you to be a very brilliant artist for that. So I would just love to hear you talk about how truth-telling and humor and satire, how those things work together in your practice.
Humor is a mystical thing to me as well. So I don't break it down. Like I remember watching a round table. I don't know. It could have been 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And it was Louis CK. It was Chris Rock and Ricky Gervais. All three of them were sitting around and they were pontificating on what makes something funny. And it was the least funny thing that they've ever done. I was trying to break it down. But it's very similar to music in that you can take apart certain sketches and you can be like, here's where this tag was, and that's why this is funny. But like you get down to like a certain point where you're like, I'm not sure why this melody is so wonderful. You know, it's kind of monotonous, really, if you look at it. So what makes it so special? But I can say this. I can speak to the transcendent nature of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And that I know on many occasions, laughter, humor has saved my life. Because I really mean it when I say, like, there have been times where I wasn't doing well.
Yeah.
Like, I was pretty bad off, like mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Truly mental breakdown. And it wasn't until My mom made me laugh when she said, "I'm going to set up a video camera and I'm going to do an impression of you." and other people would have found it very offensive.
Yeah.
Because she was basically like, "I can't get away from my mind. Oh, my thoughts are so interesting. Nobody's ever thought these thoughts before," and blah blah blah. And you know, and she was like, "Oh God, I just want to end it all. I don't want to be here anymore." And she was making fun of me,
yes.
And I realized I hadn't laughed in a month. Mm. I hadn't laughed because I'm getting very emotional.
This is good,
but I had been so in a dark place, and that was the first moment in like a month that I thought like I could go on, maybe I could go on. And why is that? Why is it that laughter, like, it's life?
Yeah.
It makes you want to live, just
yes.
like music, you know, just like eating good food. It's like, to me, it's that essential to the desire to be alive. Is to laugh.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It's so good. It's so good. Thank you for sharing that. It's laugh,
yeah.
laugh.
Sorry.
No, I'm glad. I love it. You're in a safe place to fall apart, you know?
Okay. I might start to dissociate
myself. We're about to have a therapy sesh. I don't know who's the therapist, though.
Don't look at me.
No, it's so good, though. Laughter is healing. And I think that is part of that mystical quality of it. It is kind of weird to talk about it because same way if you try to talk about like a kiss or like you said, the way a song makes you feel, it's like you're almost like talking the magic out of it. And so you can't get
right.
too linear as you try to describe it in words. You just have to experience it. It's almost like
yes.
to understand it, you have to experience it. But laughter is healing. And I think in my own life, that has been a saving grace in my own life is laughter and humor. And it's funny because my friends, if we're sitting around having drinks at night or just hanging out or something like that, I go into these characters.
Yeah.
And they're so similar to some of your Appalachian stuff. That's why when I found you, I was like, oh my God, this is like soul sister here. My friends are always telling me, they're like, dude, you've been trying to do this art and faith thing for years. You just need to publish your crazy mess.
Yeah.
And you're gonna blow up. And I'm like, you're probably right.
Well, listen, it's always the thing that you didn't think people would care about. Maybe because the stakes feel lower,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, that's so good.
But I'm always going to say, go for it. I'm always going to say, go for it. But you know, the other thing about humor too, the one thing that I've found that's interesting is like humor, there are very few, sometimes humor is of its time. Like a lot of the old SNL, I intellectually understand why that was funny, but because it's no longer subversive or because it's no longer shocking, it's lost its humor value for me. So my mom will sit there and laugh her ass off at Rosanna Dana. And I understand
yeah.
why that would have been funny at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But because I've seen it happen in different iterations of it, it doesn't make me laugh. So it's so weird that sometimes humor, you know, humor's not a universal, really.
Yeah. It's very contextual as well.
Yeah.
You know, it has a time and place, and it's interesting that the universal and the local kind of come together in humor, I would think, you know.
Well, a lot of people don't understand my characters that are not, I mean, some people will think that it's just funny, but there are a lot of people, if they don't understand the nuances of the region.
Totally.
Like they won't get that I've actually kind of tapped into something like other people from that region forgot about.
I think it's why I identified with your work so much, because I was like, oh my gosh, I totally get this.
Yes. Which is fun. Yeah. I'd rather be popular with a smaller group than be just universally loved.
Yeah. Well, talk to me for a few minutes about your characters. And I believe, if I have this correct, that Pawpaw and Aunt Pam, they were your first characters that kind of, would you say they kind of broke you out into the scene?
Yeah.
Talk to me about your characters. Are these all different parts of your own personality? Because I know for me, characters show up in my head uninvited sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, this guy is here. He showed up, you know? And
yes.
And then you just have to write it out. It's like a story shows up and you have to go with it.
Totally.
Talk to me about your process with that.
To me, that's all just pure fun. And I don't know how those characters, they truly do come to you. And it feels almost like a download mm-hmm. of this person's spirit. So then you're just kind of, when I get one of those downloads, I'm like, drop me in any context and we can make it funny.
Yes.
But that has to do for me probably with like being immersed in that. Like this is not just my own papaw, but it's like, it's all these old men that would go to, and they would sit at the liar's table and have their coffee and their biscuit. Yeah. So I've been around those men all my life, and just being an empathetic person, you just pick up on their, and being interested in people and just finding people to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. My Aunt Pam is based loosely on one aunt, but then also a bunch of other women that went to the church mm-hmm. too. My aunt dresses better than Pam does, and she does her makeup not so ratchet. But there were women at the church that had them crazy drawn on eyebrows, that had very obvious like black lip liner with like a red, you know, and you're thinking, good God, it's just somebody get Myrtle you know, she needs to not be taking all them Xanax before she puts that makeup on. But they are kind of based on real people, but they're also an amalgamation of different people that fit that archetype.
Yeah, totally. I love it. I love it so much. You know, the last thing I want to say here, and this is just something coming to me now. You've said several times how these things come to you as a download. And it's almost like you don't even know where they are. For me, and I'm not trying to impose this on you, but how cool is it to think that God would give downloads of complete ridiculous nonsense to us for the sake of laughter? And I think that that's one of the breakdowns that can happen. I'll say it this way. I think that irreverence can be a holy thing.
Hmm.
And I think that sometimes divine humor, people have asked me, what's your favorite characteristic of God? And for me, it's mischief. And I think that that aspect of the divine, that aspect of God, we often miss. And you don't get that a lot in church context. We're very careful to be reverent. And like you said, you even grew up fearing this character of God. You know, don't do anything wrong. But I tend to think that humor is a divine gift, and I tend to think mm-hmm. that these ridiculous downloads that we get, who knows? Maybe sometimes they are just the laughter of God filtering down into our creative process. I'd like to think so, at least.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much importance to myself. I would say that feels closer to the love of God than some stuffy hymn to me. You know, that's what really brings joy to my soul. And I can only really speak from my own experience. But surely if God had, you know, if what Jesus said was that he came to give you life more abundant, I would think that laughter fits in really nicely with that. To me, laughter screams of abundance. It's just, it's so much joy inside you that you can't hold it in, that it just bubbles over, you know?
Love it. Andy, thank you so much for joining me today on the Makers and Mystics podcast. I'm truly a fan of your work. This has been amazing. And you get the award that you are the only person I've ever had on Makers and Mystics that used the word pontificate.
So. Yeah, well, now what do I get?
I don't know. That's to be determined.
That's my award. Oh, hell.
Amazing. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Makers and Mystics podcast. This episode was produced by me, Stephen Roach, with music by Andy Marie Tillman and Somewhere at Sea. Be sure to see the show notes of this episode for links to today's guest and to join the Makers and Mystics Creative Collective. If you've been inspired by this or other Makers and Mystics episodes, you can show your support by becoming a monthly patron and help make these conversations possible. We'll see you again next week, and until then, keep creating. The world needs your art.